Chapter 19. I would fain have had friend William's advice whither we should go, but he always put it off with some quaking quibble or other. In short, he did not care for directing us neither, whether he made a piece of conscience of it, or whether he did not care to venture, having it come against him afterwards or no, this I know not, but we concluded at last without him. We were, however, pretty long in resolving, and hankered about the Rio de la Plata a long time. At last we spied a sail to windward, and it was such a sail as I believe had not been seen in that part of the world a great while. It wanted not that we should give a chase, for it stood directly towards us, as well as they that steered could make it, and even that was more accident of weather than anything else, for if the wind had chopped about anywhere they must have gone with it. I leave any man, that is a sailor, or understands anything of a ship, to judge what a figure this ship made, when we first saw her, and what we could imagine, was the matter with her. Her main top mast was come by the board about 6 foot above the cap, and fell forward, the head of the top gallant mast hanging in the fore shrouds by the stay, at the same time the peril of the mizzen topsail yard by some accident giving way, the mizzen topsail braces the standing part, of which being fast to the main topsail shrouds, brought the mizzen topsail, yard and all, down with it, which spread over part of the quarter deck like an awning. The fore topsail was hoisted up 2/3 of the mast, but the sheets were flown. The fore yard was lowered down upon the forecastle, the sail loose, and part of it hanging overboard. In this manner she came down upon us with the wind quartering. In a word, the figure the whole ship made was the most confounding to men that understood the sea that ever was seen. She had no boat, neither had she any colors out. When we came near to her, we fired a gun to bring her to. She took no notice of it, nor of us, but came on just as she did before. We fired again, but it was all one. At length we came within pistol shot of one another, but nobody answered nor appeared. So we began to think that it was a ship gone ashore somewhere in distress, and the men having forsaken her, the high tide had floated her off to sea. Coming nearer to her, we ran up alongside of her so close that we could hear a noise within her, and see the motion of several people through her ports. Upon this we manned out 2 boats full of men, and very well armed, and ordered them to board her at the same minute, as near as they could, and to enter one at her 4 chains on the one side, and the other amidships on the other side. As soon as they came to the ship's side, a surprising multitude of black sailors, such as they were, appeared upon deck, and, in short, terrified our men, so much that the boat which was to enter her men in the waist stood off again, and durst not board her, and the men, that entered out of the other boat, finding the first boat, as they thought, beaten off, and seeing the ship full of men, jumped all back again into their boat, and put off, not knowing what the matter was. Upon this we prepared to pour in a broadside upon her, but our friend William set us to rights again here, for it seems he guessed how it was sooner than we did, and coming up to me, for it was our ship that came up with her, "Friend," says he, "I am of opinion that thou art wrong in this matter, and thy men have been wrong also in their conduct. I'll tell thee how thou shalt take this ship, without making use of those things called guns." "How can that be, William?" said one. "Why," said he, "thou mayest take her with thy helm. Thou seest they keep no steerage, and thou seest the condition they are in. Board her with thy ship upon her lee quarter, and so enter her from the ship. I am persuaded thou wilt take her without fighting, for there is some mischief has befallen the ship, which we know nothing of. In a word, it being a smooth sea, and little wind, I took his advice, and laid her aboard. Immediately our men entered the ship, where we found a large ship, with upwards of 600 negroes, men, and women, boys, and girls, and not one Christian or white man on board. I was struck with horror at the sight, for immediately I concluded, as was partly the case, that these black devils had got loose, had murdered all the white men, and thrown them into the sea, And I had no sooner told my mind to the men, but the thought so enraged them, that I had much ado to keep my men from cutting them all in pieces. But William, with many persuasions, prevailed upon them, by telling them that it was nothing, but what, if they were in the negroes' condition, they would do if they could, and that the negroes had really the highest injustice done them, to be sold for slaves without their consent, and that the law of nature dictated it to them, that they ought not to kill them, and that it would be willful murder to do it. This prevailed with them, and cooled their first heat, so they only knocked down 20 or 30 of them, and the rest ran all down between decks to their first places, believing, as we fancied, that we were their first masters come again. It was a most unaccountable difficulty we had next, for we could not make them understand one word we said, nor could we understand one word ourselves that they said. We endeavored by signs to ask them whence they came, but they could make nothing of it. We pointed to the great cabin, to the round house, to the cook room, then to our faces, to ask if they had no white men on board, and where they were gone, but they could not understand what we meant. On the other hand, they pointed to our boat, and to their ship, asking questions as well as they could, and said 1,000 things, and expressed themselves with great earnestness. But we could not understand a word of it all, or know what they meant by any of their signs. We knew very well they must have been taken on board the ship as slaves, and that it must be by some European people too. We could easily see that the ship was a Dutch-built ship, but very much altered, having been built upon, and, as we supposed, in France, for we found 2 or 3 French books on board, and afterwards we found clothes, linen, lace, some old shoes, and several other things. We found among the provisions some barrels of Irish beef, some Newfoundland fish, and several other evidences that there had been Christians on board, but saw no remains of them. We found not a sword, gun, pistol, or weapon of any kind, except some cutlasses, and the negroes had hid them below where they lay. We asked them what was become of all the small arms, pointing to our own, and to the places where those belonging to the ship had hung. One of the negroes understood me presently, and beckoned to me to come upon the deck, where, taking my fusee, which I never let go out of my hand for some time, after we had mastered the ship, I say, offering to take hold of it, he made the proper motion of throwing it into the sea, by which I understood, as I did afterwards, that they had thrown all the small arms, powder, shot, swords, and sea into the sea, believing, as I supposed, those things would kill them, though the men were gone. After we understood this, we made no question, but that the ship's crew, having been surprised by these desperate rogues, had gone the same way, and had been thrown overboard also. We looked all over the ship to see if we could find any blood, and we thought we did perceive some in several places, but the heat of the sun, melting the pitch and tar upon the decks, made it impossible for us to discern it exactly, except in the round house, where we plainly saw that there had been much blood. We found the scuttle open, by which we supposed that the captain and those that were with him had made their retreat into the great cabin, or those in the cabin had made their escape up into the round house. But that which confirmed us most of all in what had happened was that, upon further inquiry, we found that there were 7 or 8 of the negroes very much wounded, 2 or 3 of them with shot, whereof one had his leg broken, and lay in a miserable condition, the flesh being mortified, and, as our friend William said, in 2 days more he would have died. William was a most dexterous surgeon, and he showed it in this cure, for though all the surgeons we had on board both our ships, and we had no less than 5, that called themselves bred surgeons, besides 2 or 3 who were pretenders or assistants, though all these gave their opinions that the negro's leg must be cut off, and that his life could not be saved without it, that the mortification had touched the marrow in the bone, that the tendons were mortified, and that he could never have the use of his leg, if it should be cured, William said nothing in general, but that his opinion was otherwise, and that he desired the wound might be searched, and that he would then tell them further. Accordingly he went to work with the leg, and, as he desired, that he might have some of the surgeons to assist him, we appointed him two of the ablest of them to help, and all of them to look on, if they thought fit. William went to work his own way, and some of them pretended to find fault at first. However, he proceeded and searched every part of the leg, where he suspected the mortification had touched it. In a word, he cut off a great deal of mortified flesh, in all which the poor fellow felt no pain. William proceeded till he brought the vessels which he had cut to bleed, and the man to cry out. Then he reduced the splinters of the bone, and, calling for help, set it, as we call it, and bound it up, and laid the man to rest, who found himself much easier than before. At the first opening the surgeons began to triumph. The mortification seemed to spread, and a long red streak of blood appeared from the wound upwards to the middle of the man's thigh, and the surgeons told me the man would die in a few hours. I went to look at it, and found William himself under some surprise. But when I asked him how long he thought the poor fellow could live, he looked gravely at me, and said, "As long as thou canst." "I am not at all apprehensive of his life," said he, "but I would cure him, if I could, without making a cripple of him." I found he was not just then upon the operation, as to his leg, but was mixing up something to give the poor creature, to repel, as I thought, the spreading contagion, and to abate, or prevent any feverish temper that might happen in the blood. After which he went to work again, and opened the leg in two places above the wound, cutting out a great deal of mortified flesh, which it seemed was occasioned by the bandage, which had pressed the parts too much. And withal, the blood being at the time in a more than common disposition to mortify, might assist to spread it. Well, our friend William conquered all this, cleared the spreading mortification, and the red streak went off again, the flesh began to heal, and matter to run, and in a few days the man's spirits began to recover, his pulse beat regular, he had no fever, and gathered strength daily, and, in a word, he was a perfect sound man in about 10 weeks, and we kept him amongst us, and made him an able seaman. But to return to the ship, we never could come at a certain information about it, till some of the negroes which we kept on board, and whom we taught to speak English, gave the account of it afterwards, and this maimed man in particular. We inquired, by all the signs and motions we could imagine, what was become of the people, and yet we could get nothing from them. Our lieutenant was for torturing some of them to make them confess, but William opposed that vehemently, and when he heard it was under consideration he came to me. "Friend," says he, "I make a request to thee, not to put any of these poor wretches to torment." "Why, William," said I, "why not? You see they will not give any account of what has become of the white men." "Nay," says William, "do not say so. I suppose they have given thee a full account of every particular of it." "How so?" says I. "Pray what are we the wiser for all their jabbering?" "Nay," says William, "that may be thy fault, for aught I know, thou wilt not punish the poor men, because they cannot speak English, and perhaps they never heard a word of English before. Now, I may very well suppose that they have given thee a large account of everything, for thou seest with what earnestness, and how long, some of them have talked to thee. And if thou canst not understand their language, nor they thine, how can they help that? At the best, thou dost but suppose that they have not told thee the whole truth of the story, and, on the contrary, I suppose they have. And how wilt thou decide the question, whether thou art right, or whether I am right? Besides, what can they say to thee, when thou askest them a question upon the torture, and at the same time they do not understand the question, and thou dost not know whether they say A or no? It is no compliment to my moderation to say I was convinced by these reasons, and yet we had all much ado to keep our second lieutenant from murdering some of them, to make them tell. What if they had told? He did not understand one word of it, but he would not be persuaded, but that the Negroes must needs understand him when he asked them whether the ship had any boat or no, like ours, and what was become of it. But there was no remedy, but to wait till we made these people understand English, and to adjourn the story till that time. The case was thus. Where they were taken on board the ship, that we could never understand, because they never knew the English names which we give to those coasts, or what nation they were who belonged to the ship, because they knew not one tongue from another. But thus far the Negro I examined, who was the same whose leg William had cured, told us, that they did not speak the same language as we spoke, nor the same our Portuguese spoke, so that in all probability they must be French or Dutch. Then he told us, that the white men used them barbarously, that they beat them unmercifully, that one of the Negro men had a wife and two Negro children, one a daughter, about 16 years old, that a white man abused the Negro man's wife, and afterwards his daughter, which, as he said, made all the Negro men mad, and that the woman's husband was in a great rage, at which the white man was so provoked, that he threatened to kill him. But, in the night, the Negro man, being loose, got a great club, by which he made us understand he meant a handspike, and that when the same Frenchman, if it was a Frenchman, came among them again, he began again to abuse the Negro man's wife, at which the Negro, taking up the handspike, knocked his brains out at one blow, and then taking the key from him with which he usually unlocked the handcuffs which the Negroes were fettered with, he set about 100 of them at liberty, who, getting up upon the deck by the same scuttle that the white men came down, and taking the man's cutlass who was killed, and laying hold of what came next them, they fell upon the men that were upon the deck, and killed them all, and afterwards those they found upon the forecastle, that the captain and his other men, who were in the cabin and the round house, defended themselves with great courage, and shot out at the loopholes at them, by which he and several other men were wounded, and some killed, but that they broke into the round house after a long dispute, where they killed two of the white men, but owned that the two white men killed 11 of their men, before they could break in. And then the rest, having got down the scuttle into the great cabin, wounded 3 more of them. That, after this, the gunner of the ship, having secured himself in the gun room, one of his men hauled up the long boat close under the stern, and putting into her all the arms and ammunition they could come at, got all into the boat, and afterwards took in the captain, and those that were with him, out of the great cabin. When they were all thus embarked, they resolved to lay the ship aboard again, and try to recover it. That they boarded the ship in a desperate manner, and killed at first all that stood in their way, but the Negroes being by this time all loose, and having gotten some arms, though they understood nothing of powder and bullet, or guns, yet the men could never master them. However, they lay under the ship's bow, and got out all the men they had left in the cook room, who had maintained themselves there, notwithstanding all the Negroes could do, and with their small arms killed between 30 and 40 of the Negroes, but were at last forced to leave them. They could give me no account whereabouts this was, whether near the coast of Africa, or far off, or how long it was before the ship fell into our hands. Only, in general, it was a great while ago, as they called it, and, by all we could learn, it was within 2 or 3 days, after they had set sail from the coast. They told us, that they had killed about 30 of the white men, having knocked them on the head with crows and handspikes, and such things as they could get, and one strong Negro killed 3 of them with an iron crow, after he was shot twice through the body, and that he was afterwards shot through the head by the captain himself at the door of the round house, which he had split open with the crow, and this we supposed, was the occasion of the great quantity of blood which we saw at the round house door. The same Negro told us, that they threw all the powder and shot they could find into the sea, and they would have thrown the great guns into the sea, if they could have lifted them. Being asked how they came to have their sails in such a condition, his answer was, they no understand. They know what the sales do. That was, they did not so much as know that it was the sales that made the ship go, or understand what they meant, or what to do with them. When we asked him whither they were going, he said they did not know, but believed they should go home to their own country again. I asked him, in particular, what he thought we were when we first came up with them. He said they were terribly frightened, believing we were the same white men that had gone away in their boats, and were come again in a great ship, with the two boats with them, and expected they would kill them all. This was the account we got out of them, after we had taught them to speak English, and to understand the names and use of the things belonging to the ship which they had occasion to speak of. And we observed that the fellows were too innocent to dissemble in their relation, and that they all agreed in the particulars, and were always in the same story, which confirmed very much the truth of what they said. Having taken this ship, our next difficulty was, what to do with the Negroes. The Portuguese in the Brazils would have bought them all of us, and been glad of the purchase, if we had not showed ourselves enemies there, and been known for pirates. But, as it was, we durst not go ashore anywhere thereabouts, or treat with any of the planters, because we should raise the whole country upon us. And, if there were any such things as men of war in any of their ports, we should be as sure to be attacked by them, and by all the force they had by land or sea. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.